took off. When she agreed to stay over, my breath hitched in my throat. I offered my room, but Mom said Brooks could have hers. "I'll sleep in the chair in Zane's room," Mom said when Brooks tried to argue. "To make sure," she hesitated, "just in case." "I can take care of myself, Mom." She messed up my hair playfully. "Maybe I want you to take care of me," she said with a smile. While Mom did the dishes, I went to find Brooks. She was sitting on the edge of Mom's bed, kicking her feet. I briefly thought about what Miss Cab had said about not being able to trust her. But she just saved our butts, and evil people didn't do that sort of thing. "Brooks?" She stared straight ahead with a faraway look in her eyes. "Whoever sent that Alush is going to figure out it didn't succeed." "Yeah, I know." "Someone wants to stop you from releasing Apooch, and they're willing to kill you to do it." "The demon runners are rooting for me to do it, and some mysterious person wants to prevent me from doing it. Who do you think it could be?" I swallowed the lump in my throat, thinking about all the creatures in my Maya book, trying to decide which was the least evil. "No idea," Brooks said. "Apooch has a lot of enemies. It could be anyone." I was sort of hoping she could help me narrow it down through the process of elimination. Then at least I'd know what I was dealing with and where I stood. But truth be told, I didn't even know where I stood with Brooks. "How did you find out about the prophecy in the first place?" Brooks's mouth was a thin line. "Secrets like that are hard to keep." That's how it was in school, too. Someone would tell a secret at lunch, and by the end of the day, the whole school knew about it. I picked mindlessly at a chip of paint on the door jamb. "Who told you?" I asked. "I promised I wouldn't tell." She looked miserable, like she wanted to break that promise. I would if I could." I didn't know what to believe. On the one hand, Brooks acted like a friend most of the time, but she was so secretive and mysterious. On the other hand, Ms. Cab had warned me not to trust her. Why would she tell me no walls or tricksters if it wasn't true? "You saved my mom, so, thanks." Then our eyes met. It was really hard to concentrate when she looked at me like that, all soft and understanding. I cleared my throat. "We have to stop Apooch." "We will." The way she said it, with all that determination in her voice, made my spine tingle. I tapped my fingers on the door and said goodnight. Back in my room, I sat on my bed and pulled out the Maya book again. There were so many gods, legends, and creatures, and all of them had different names and stories, depending on the Maya region of either Mexico or Central America. Mom had said my dad was from the Yucatan, but nothing in the book was categorized by geography. I fell back against my pillow in frustration. My muscles ached. My eyes burned. I closed them for a second. When I opened them again, it was already 2 in the afternoon. The eclipse was only 3 hours away. How had I slept for so long? I stumbled into the living room where Hondo was watching TV, as usual. "Where's Mom?" Hondo didn't look up. "Had to give the cops a statement. Then she had something else to take care of." "Take care of?" "Yeah. She says she'd be back tomorrow, and you're supposed to stay home with me. Don't worry, kid. I'll make sure you don't starve." Sudden gusts rattled the windows. Thunder crashed in the distance. "Why didn't she wake me up?" "She tried, but you were dead to the world." I rubbed my head. It must have been the tea Miss Cab gave me. "Iron Skulls wrestling," Hondo said. "Want to watch?" "What about Brooks? Is she still here?" "Think I saw her out back. Why she'd want to be in this nasty wind, I have no idea." He rocketed off the couch when Iron Skull body slammed his opponent. "Did you see that?" Something felt off. Where would Mom go that would take more than a day? Maybe it was a good thing she wouldn't be here for the eclipse. My stomach turned when I remembered what I had to face. Ms. Cab better get here soon with Rosie, I thought. I started for the back door, then realized I was in yesterday's clothes and probably smelled like Hondo's gym bag. So I took a record-breaking 30-second shower and brushed my teeth. As I was pulling a T-shirt over my head, I heard a long howl in the tangled wind. I froze, not sure it was real. There it was again. Rosie? I'd know that cry anywhere. It was Rosie. Miss Cab had brought her back. With my cane in hand, I lumbered outside and looked around the yard. No Rosie. I was about to head to Miss Cab's when I realized which direction the cries were coming from. The volcano. Chapter 12. A voice in my head was screaming, "Don't do it!" But this was Rosie. My Rosie. I hobbled past Nana's headstone and across the desert, zigzagging between the mesquite and Ocotillo. A jackrabbit skirted out from a bush, and I nearly stumbled over it. Huge black clouds formed, so thick they blocked out the sun. The wind kicked and screamed, doing its best to knock me off my feet. But I pressed on toward the beast, still hearing Rosie's cries and keeping an eye out for Brooks the whole time. When I got to the secret entrance, Rosie's cries sounded even more desperate. I scurried inside, crawling through the narrow passage and then balancing carefully down the steep slope to the bottom. There was nothing but heart-stopping silence. Even the wind had stopped howling. "Rosie?" my voice squeaked. The place still reeked of vomit and rot, which reminded me of the Demon Runner. And just thinking about that stinking monster made me want to punch something. Suddenly, my blood ran hot. So hot, I felt like I might burn from the inside out. That's when I looked down at my throbbing hand. It was covered in yellow ooze. The Demon Runner must have left slimy residue on the wall I had touched. Panic rose, fast and furious. The poison! It pulsed and stung. My skin began to puff up with big purple welts. Sweat trickled down my neck, and when I wiped it away with my clean hand, I saw that my perspiration was yellow. I closed my eyes and took a few deep breaths. I heard the rustle of wings behind me. When I opened my eyes, I saw Brooks the Hawk swoop into the chamber. She changed into her human form right before my eyes. I didn't think I'd ever get tired of seeing that kind of magic. The way the air shimmered around her in blues and golds and greens. Brooks's eyes searched my face, then landed on my neck. "The poison! We have to get it out!" "I'll be fine." My blood would protect me, Miss Cab had said. But without her tea as a pain suppressant, how bad would it hurt? On a scale of 1 to 10, I was shooting for a 1. Brooks shook her head. "The poison's had time to ferment since yesterday," she said. "It's more toxic now." I snapped. Maybe it was the poison talking, but when your blood's boiling and venom is in your bloodstream, and you have no idea if you're half monster, you do and say things that are completely whacked. "Why'd you really come here? If this Apooch is so wicked and can really destroy the whole world, then why send some random girl to find him?" Brooks clenched her jaw. I could tell she was trying to decide if she should let me have it with words or with a punch to the gut. She did neither. "I can help you. I don't need your help." Brooks ignored me. "It's going to hurt." Why do people always say that, as if the warning somehow makes it better? Truth is, I'd rather not have known what she was about to do. But I found myself nodding, and she changed back into a hawk before I could stop her talon from slicing my arm open from elbow to wrist. The pain was terrible. Yellow ooze rushed out of me instead of blood, pooling on the ground where it sizzled and smoked. And let me tell you, it smelled worse than 10-day-old fish and vomit combined. I gagged. Brooks took her human form and said, "Squeeze it out," while she demonstrated by kneading her own arm. My eyes were half closed, and I shook my head. Had I been more coherent, I might have screamed, "End to the no!" but my hand must have ignored my brain because it started to squeeze. The burning was worse than anything I'd ever felt. A million whispers bounced off the cave walls, angry and tormented. The cave began to spin, and I thought I might pass out. Then, gradually, everything came back into focus. The whispers disappeared, and bit by bit, my pulse steadied until I felt like myself again. When I looked down at my arm, the wound closed up right before my eyes. That's freaking amazing! I felt supernatural and totally awesome. My skin had just healed itself. It's a Nawal thing. Pretty sure it has to do with me being supernatural. Brooks gave a small shrug. I shook out my arm. How'd you find me? I knew you'd be reckless enough to come back here alone. I was waiting, up top, she said, pointing above. But when I called to you, the wind swallowed my voice. She inched closer. So the magic summoned you? No, but I heard Rosie. What do you mean? Her cries. They were so loud I was sure she was here. Brooks's face fell. That wasn't Rosie, Zane. Don't you see? They're tricking you. I know what I heard. Taking my hand, she said, the eclipse is coming, and we have to find the artifact before then. I can't do it without you. You're the one in the prophecy. And then what? I have to leave. But you just got here, I blurted out. I couldn't help it. I'd only known her for a few days, but the idea of life without Brooks around seemed so boring. Do you hear Rosie now? She asked. I shook my head and circled the cave. Careful to avoid toxic slime, I pressed my ear to the walls, like maybe my dog was inside one of them. Brooks followed closely, speaking in hushed tones. You're right, you know. Who am I to think I can stop the evilest god of all time? I'm doing it to... Her voice trailed off. Then she added, I'm only part Nawal. It's why I can't shapeshift into anything except a hawk. No one wants to train a half-breed. But if I could accomplish something big, I wouldn't be a nothing my whole life. I recalled what the Alush had said to my mom. Yeah, being a half-breed nothing would officially suck. I kicked a rock across the ground. Ugh, I'm so stupid. That's not what I meant. I mean, it's okay. I get what you mean. I could identify with her need to be something bigger. A better version of herself. So nobody sent you? You just, like, ran away? You could say that. From where? A place I can't go back to. But don't worry, no one's looking for me. What about your mom or dad? My dad's off with his new family and my mom's dead. I'm sorry. I snatched a pebble from the ground and rolled it between each knuckle. Maybe you could stay with us. Then that's impossible. Why? You can't just fly around on your own out there. She focused on the rolling pebble. It's not that I wouldn't want to or anything. I just can't. I felt stupid for suggesting it. Hey, I bet you're part magician, Brooks said. Changing the subject and considering my whole body in a way that made my face flush a million shades of red. Magician? Like, pull a rabbit out of a hat? No, like a powerful wielder of magic. Yeah, well, that wasn't one of the options Miss Cab listed. They're smart, even devious, but also very loyal and what? Dangerous. I mean, if you cross them... There's a place down in Uxmal, Mexico, called the Pyramid of the Magician, and... Wait! I cut in, remembering something about that in my book. Isn't it also called the Pyramid of the Soothsayer? I wondered if this was referencing the Great Soothsayer. It had to be, if she had a whole pyramid named after her. Yeah, it's called that too, Brooks said. Maybe someday you can go there and see for yourself. We could even... You've been there? In the same instant, another one of Rosie's whimpers echoed across the chamber. Did you hear that? I hurried down the tunnel and to the rock wall, the same one the demon runner had been clawing through the other day. Hear what? I began pulling the rocks free. They were loose and came out easily. My adrenaline was pumping. Rosie! Suddenly, the wall began to crumble like dust. A narrow passage revealed itself, and a barely there light flickered from beyond. Rosie's cry carried through the opening. Part of my mind knew it was a trap, but the other part didn't care. I mean, what if it really was Rosie, and I missed my only chance to save her? I wedged myself into the narrow opening. Wait! Brooks cried. I thought she might try to stop me, but instead, she reached into the collar of her shirt and pulled out three leather strings, each with a mini flashlight attached. I brought back up this time. Did you remember the batteries? Brooks huffed. Let's go. We made our way through the cramped corridor for about 20 yards until we came out into an enormous cavity. The flashlight's yellow beam circled the place. In the center of the floor was a green pool. Stalactites clung to the ceiling overhead, dripping water into the pond with a hollow echo that made my blood run cold. Rosie was nowhere to be seen. I swallowed hard. We took a few steps past the pool. It gave off an overwhelmingly foul smell, like it was filled with rotting fish. Pale rock columns, about 2 or 3 feet tall, grew out of the sloping ground and surrounded a taller stalagmite with a flat surface. On top was a large stone bowl. I hesitated, then drew closer and peered inside. Two cracked animal skulls were sitting on a pile of skinny white sticks. No, not sticks. They looked more like bird bones. Well, didn't that just spell welcome? This is the sacrifice chamber, Brooks whispered. Her voice was tense in the cold air. The demon runners did this. They prepared the place for Apuch's release. My eyes bounced over the rough ash-colored walls and across the uneven floor. I shivered. I guess that means we're in the right spot. Or the wrong one, depending on your perspective, I said, looking over my shoulder for any demon runners who might have followed us. I just wanted to find the thing Apuch was hiding in so Brooks could take him away and make sure he never got out. Then we could prove that soothsayer wrong. I kept expecting Miss Cab to show up any minute, too, to poof out of thin air. She was supposed to be back before the eclipse. Brooks stood and turned to me. When you heard Rosie, it must have been the magic calling you. Clever. I guess. She looked pale. Come on, we need to move fast. We only have a couple hours. Do you hear anything now? Aren't you the one with the super bionic senses? I tried, remember? She said. I can't hear this frequency. The magic will only call to you. I tuned my ears, but all I heard was the drip, drip, drip of the water and a strange breathing sound, like the walls themselves were inhaling and exhaling. A dark ripple shifted across the water. It's in there, I said, pointing to the pool. That puddle? Are you sure? I'm sure. Like 80% or 100? Brooks asked, frowning. I mean, there's a big difference. I was positive. I could feel the air pulse and buzz with a strange energy when I stepped closer to the water. Despite the stink, I felt drawn to it, and every second we stood there, I found myself wanting more desperately to jump in. I'm 1,000% sure, and it's not a puddle. It's deep. I'm not sure how I knew, but I did, just like I knew it would be cold. Brooks sucked in her lower lip. Well, that's unfortunate. Why? I can't swim. Okay, so unless the animal skeletons came to life and decided to fish Apuch out of the water, I was the lucky retriever. Great. Brooks raised the flashlight beam to the ceiling. Holy Kay! We're doomed. Those are not the words anyone wants to hear when they're standing in a dark chamber of sacrifice with the Lord of the Dead trapped in a smelly pond a few feet away. I swore under my breath, then craned my neck. The stalactites trembled, then split open with a bone-cracking sound that sent chills down my spine. Bits of rock fell, and we ducked out of the way. When I looked back up, I stumbled and gasped. At the base of the stalactites, dozens of glowing blue pods clung to the ceiling. A black ooze dripped from them into the water. Optimist me thought, maybe we'd made some kind of cool archaeological discovery. Then I saw that the translucent husks were pulsing and stretching. Definitely not a cool archaeological discovery. Sleeping demon runners. Just like Ms. Cab had said, they'd been busy duplicating in Apuch's hiding place. It was time to bolt. But as soon as I grabbed Brooks's hand to lead her back the way we'd come, a demon runner leaped down from the ceiling, blocking our path. He swiveled his head slowly, like he was searching for us. We froze in our tracks. Brooks squeezed my hand so hard I thought she might break my bones. Then, one by one, the lights went out in the pods above, and if you've ever heard someone slurp the last of a shake through a straw, you'll understand the sound that filled the cave. The sacks were opening. The demon runner squinted. This was one time I wished I didn't have night vision. I didn't need to see the way his evil beady eyes roamed the chamber. "Zane Obispo," he hissed, stretching his arms toward us as we slowly backed away. "Demon runners or pool?" I whispered, every muscle in my body tensed, ready for flight. "Neither," Brooks breathed. Above us, a newly hatched demon runner hung upside down like a bat, stretched its neck, and turned its head 180 degrees until its fiery red eyes found us. "They don't want me here," Brooks whispered. It opened its mouth to scream, to wake the others. The demon runner in front of us inched closer, groping through the dark.
"Stranger,"
it said in a rusty voice. "No matter what, Brooks, don't let go of me." Her eyes widened, and she pulled away from my grasp. The demon runner let out an ear-piercing cry that seemed to shake the walls. I grabbed Brooks's hand, and we jumped feet first into the dark pool. Chapter 13. As I'd predicted, the water was arctic cold, like a million shards of ice stabbing my skin. I held Brooks's hand tightly as I pulled her down and down. Was there a bottom? I wondered. I was feeling pretty grateful that my mom had made me take swimming lessons at the city pool when I was little. I liked swimming. In the water, I didn't have a limp, and I was glad my eyes could see through cloudy water, too. 100 points for Team Supernatural. Beneath us were several other passages that branched off in all directions. I had to choose the right one, or we'd end up as skeletons at the bottom of this pool. I peered through the dark until I saw a shimmering light down the corridor to the right. Swimming furiously, I led Brooks into a narrow tunnel. I floated on my back, feeling with one hand for an air hole in the razor-sharp rock ceiling. Just when my lungs were about to collapse, we came upon an opening about 4 feet in diameter. I stuck my head out and sucked in air. Beneath me, Brooks was still thrashing around in the water. I hauled her up, turning her over slowly until she could take a huge gulp of oxygen.
"We're going to die in here," she cried between gasps.
"I saw a light," I choked out, "up ahead. We need to try and reach it."
I can't do it, Zane."
"Yes, you can."
"It's coming. The demon runner," she said, panting. "It's right behind us, and it wants me. It knows why I'm here."
There wasn't time for more talking. "Take the biggest breath you can, and on three, we're going to dive under.
One, two.
Suddenly, Brooks was yanked under the water and out of my grasp. The demon runner. I dove down, groping in the murk until I found Brooks's hands and ripped her free. With adrenaline coursing through my veins, I cut through the water with amazing speed I didn't know I had. I hauled Brooks into another narrow passage toward the trail of light. 10 more yards. Could we hold our breath that long? Almost there. Hang on, Brooks. Hurry! Brooks's voice rang out, but not in my ears. I heard it in my mind, and it wasn't my imagination. She screamed, "He's coming back!" "I thought the demon runners wanted me to free Apooch," I said in my head, hoping she heard me. "They do," she said. "It's me they want to stop. Just hold on. 10 more seconds. My lungs were ready to burst. Finally, the tunnel ended, opening into a large pool where we could emerge. With one hard tug, I broke the surface, gulping in air. I pulled Brooks up behind me and rolled her onto her back so her face was out of the water. Her eyes were closed and her mouth was open. "Brooks!" I hefted myself up onto the rocky ledge and hauled her behind me. It was difficult to keep my footing on the slippery surface, and I fell on my butt. The demon runner surfaced. His skin had gone from blue to gray, and it was coming off in chunks like soggy bread. I scrambled to my feet, putting myself between the monster and Brooks. "You can't have her!" I screamed. He kept coming toward us, crawling out of the pool on his belly like a salamander. When he had fully emerged, he stopped and looked down at his body. That's when he realized he was disintegrating. I guess he hadn't known water would do that to him. He screamed and hissed as his flesh fell off in chunks. Then his bones liquefied, leaving only a pool of tar-like goop floating on the pond's surface. I rushed to Brooks. She wasn't breathing. "Hang on, Brooks!" In a panic, I began mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. "Please, please, please, breathe, breathe." Her eyes didn't open. She simply lay there, her skin a terrible pale gray. Then, slowly, the air shimmered, and Brooks turned into a hawk. Not her usual grande size. She was small and fragile-looking. I felt her feathery neck for a pulse. It was there, but just barely. My own heart nearly stopped. No, this couldn't be happening. She'd just been talking to me in my head, being her pushy self, telling me to hurry. "Brooks!" I shook her gently. "Wake up! We made it! I'm not doing this alone," I said, like I could guilt her heart into beating stronger. At the same moment, a strange silver light filled the little cavern. I looked around for the first time. Pale green stalactites hung from the low ceiling. The walls looked porous, like stone sponges. Wiping water from my eyes, I followed the light to its source, a sand-colored stone column to my right. It was painted with the image of a tightly coiled serpent. In a single blink, the image came to life. The snake uncoiled and started slithering down the column. It whispered to me, "Same." "Go away!" As the reptile descended, the column became translucent, like a block of ice, and inside I could see a small black statue. It was an evil-looking owl, about 6 inches tall, with slits for eyes. The wings were spread out as if it were going to take off any second. It looked so lifelike that I knew what this was. Apooch's prison. He was inside a replica of his own pet, Muwan. My hand trembled as I clung to Brooks. "I'll fix this," I told her. "Just hang on." My insides were on fire, and a terrible burning sensation was pricking my legs. Then came a voice. It wasn't the snake. It was Apooch. "I can save her." I stayed focused on Brooks, on her golden brown feathers, on her heart that was still beating. What was I going to do? I couldn't drag her back through that pool, and from where I sat, I didn't see any exit in the rock wall. Terror made me desperate enough to talk to Pukeface. How do I get out of here? My voice echoed across the cave. I can save her, he said again. How? No response. Maybe because he'd already given me the answer. I stood up, wobbly at first, then went over to the serpent column. With trembling fingers, I reached out to touch it. Did I mention that I hate snakes? The serpent slithered across my hand, and a vertical crack appeared in the post. The two halves opened like double doors. My mind was on autopilot as I pulled the clay owl free. The statue vibrated in my hand, and a strange energy surged through me like a speeding train. Yes, Apooch whispered. With the figure clutched in my hand, I collapsed back onto the ledge near Brooks. She began to shimmer again, and I was scared she was fading, like Rosie had. No, not yet, I shook the little statue. You said you could save her. A ray of sunlight penetrated a crevice in the chamber ceiling. The eclipse was happening. Sweat trickled down my neck as a painful heat boiled my insides. I needed air desperately. One of the cave walls was angled and pitted enough that I thought I could climb up to the opening I hadn't seen. I shoved the statue into my jean pocket and started up. Don't go anywhere, Brooks, I called down. When I got to the top and peeked out, what I saw wasn't the volcano crater or the desert. It looked like the surface of Mars, miles and miles of red rock, dust, and no life. I turned toward the sky, shielding my eyes so I couldn't look directly at the eclipse. The sky was a deep bruised blue, turning darker and darker with each passing second. I tugged the owl figurine from my pocket. The time has come, Apooch whispered. Save her! You have to free me first. What do I do, Brooks? I hoped she could hear me, like when we were under the water. I can't let you die. Your demons did this to her! I screamed at that stupid smiling owl. She wanted to keep me in my prison. So do I. Apooch laughed cruelly. Seems circumstances have changed. He was right. I didn't even know where I was, and Brooks was barely holding on. I dropped my head, feeling pathetic and defeated. If I let you out, you promise to save her? Or you could just wait and see. And you can rot. Can you save her? I am the Lord of the Dead. I can save her. I remembered what Ms. Cab had told me about Puke, waking up thirsty for my blood. But that didn't matter. Not if he could save Brooks. I know it was foolish, trying to save one life by releasing a god that could destroy the whole world. But I'd worry about that later. Right now, the only thing I cared about was making sure Brooks didn't become the newest resident of Shibalba. The moon crept across the sun, slowly strangling its light. Set me free. And I want Rosie back, too. She's my dog stuck in your underworld. Yes. As the moon's shadow blotted out the sun, I took a deep breath and did what I swore I'd never do. I slammed the clay figure on the sharp rock edge in front of me. The owl busted open, its wings flying off in opposite directions. Dust rose from the broken shell, briefly obscuring the object inside. I coughed and fanned the air, then saw that it was a long, folded strip of paper, dark and soft, like wet tree bark. I picked it up to examine it more closely, and it shimmered faintly in my palm. Then it unfolded itself three times. There was no writing or picture on it. What was up with that? I traced my fingers along its blank, curled edges. Suddenly, it lifted into the air, burst into blue flame, and a tower of black smoke billowed out, followed by a sickening screech that pierced my eardrums and drove me to my knees. Chapter 14. A creature, a pooch, I guessed, appeared on the rim of the volcano with his back to me, crouched like a wild animal. He didn't look like an all-powerful god of the dead. He was skeletal, and his skin was so paper-thin I could see his crooked spine. It writhed and twisted like a snake as he heaved and moaned. And the guy didn't just smell bad. He filled the air with a bitter, poisonous odor that I was sure would kill me with one whiff. At the same moment, the black owl, Muwan, appeared. Her feathers were slick with oil. She turned her enormous eyes toward me. A trail of black smoke rose from the bird, and it shifted into a woman with long gray hair. She was wearing some kind of headdress made of red and yellow feathers. She kneeled next to Apuch and said with a bad lisp,
"My lord, I bring you a sacrifice to give you power."
Her gauzy black skirt swept across the rock. She reached into her skirt pocket and pulled out a small clay figurine, but I couldn't see the details from where I sat. She smashed it against the rim. There was a terrible screech. Then she handed Apuch a creature with two goat heads and a body like a yellow snake. It squirmed and bleated, trying to wriggle its way free. Apuch scrambled to clutch the thing. Bones snapped. Then he brought it to his mouth, bit its neck, and sucked all the blood from it before tossing the drained corpse to the cave floor below like an old orange peel. My stomach lurched. Apuch's skin began to bubble. Gray worms emerged and crawled all over the outside of his hunched body, latching onto him and somehow thickening his skin. Apuch rose to his feet slowly, groaning. I was glad he wasn't facing me. I really didn't want to look this guy in the eyes, but I had to. He'd made me a promise.
"Zane Obispo."
His voice was deep and gravelly. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. Then slowly, I looked up at him. Whoa! He'd somehow morphed from the gross, blood-sucking worm monster into a regular guy dressed in a black suit, crisp white shirt, and dark silk tie. It was an expensive suit, too, not the shiny kind with loose threads like my old history teacher always wore. Apuch was at least 6'5", but that's not what made him so intimidating. It was his black eyes, chiseled face, and broad shoulders that screamed power. "Sorry, gods who hate Apuch, you said you wanted the truth." He waved his hand, and the ledge I was standing on shimmered. A second later, Brooks materialized in comatose hawk form. I pulled her into my chest and held her closely. "We had a deal," I said, feeling her still faint heartbeat. "You said you'd save her." Apuch's black eyes found mine.
"You risked everything for a Nawal?"
"That's none of your business. Now wake her up." He ignored my demand and glanced around. Then, with another tiny movement of his hand, the dead space beyond the volcano turned into a bustling city.
"That's much better," he said. "I'm so weary of silence."
Suddenly, we were standing on the roof of a skyscraper that overlooked a whole cityscape. Below us, millions of cars inched along the freeways like bugs. I stumbled as I looked around, trying to get my bearings. Where were we? New York? Chicago? Being a non-traveler, I only had movies and books to help me out. To the left was a mountain with big white letters on it. Hollywood. We were in Los Angeles? Apuch took a deep breath and closed his eyes.
"Ah, such chaos. I can feel its sweetness buzzing all around."
"What about Brooks?" I insisted as I scanned the dark rooftop. As a small hawk, who seemed even smaller than she was inside the cave moments ago, she wasn't heavy, but I needed a place to lay her down for when he made her human again. I spotted some lounge chairs near a lap pool. This was some kind of fancy hotel or apartment building. A small fountain spilled into the pool, and there were potted palms in the corners. Muwan smiled, except she didn't have any teeth, which explained her lisp.
The gods don't know you've awakened, my lord. They are too busy getting fat and lazy to even notice.
You're my most trusted ally, Muwan, Apooch said, petting her head. What's happened to you?
Weak without your power.
He continued petting her head, and slowly a blackish mist rose, slithering up Muwan's legs, then body and head, until I blinked. Muwan had shed the old toothless hag look for a magazine photo shoot look. She was about Hondo's age, with shoulder-length raven hair and bronze skin. She wore a long silver gown that hugged her now healthy form, and her eyes glinted lilac and green in the light like rare gemstones. She smiled at Apooch, then kissed the back of his hand.
Thank you, my lord.
Apooch gave her a barely there nod, then asked,
And the seers?
Taken care of. Hold on, I butted in. What happened to the seers? Apooch walked to the edge of the pool and stared at his reflection in the water.
Don't worry. Your pathetic protector is alive and unharmed. I thought about killing her, slowly, but realized her divination abilities and knowledge might come in handy.
No wonder Ms. Cab hadn't shown up. This monster had done something to her. I felt myself flush with anger, but tamped it down. I had to keep him focused on Brooks. So, our deal? I reminded him.
Deal?
He glanced at me. My insides collapsed. By the blank look on his fearsome face, I knew he'd already forgotten. Please! I didn't care if I had to beg. I know you don't have to keep your end of the bargain. I'm just a weak human. And you're, well, you're a super god. The most powerful.
Power,
he mumbled, then squatted and ran his fingers across the pool's surface. Inky clouds bloomed beneath.
I'm curious,
he said, keeping his gaze on the darkening liquid.
How did a mere boy wake me?
His eyes darted across the water, like there was some kind of magic in it that held all the answers. He stood to his full height and let out a long breath.
I see now,
he said, looking at me with a wry smile.
You're more than a mere human, Zane Obispo.
I didn't know if that was a good or bad thing, or if it would affect his keeping his end of the bargain, so I didn't say anything. Better to keep him off balance and guessing. That's what Hondo always said. Tucking a shiny stray hair behind her ear, Muwan said,
He looks like nothing, my lord.
Nothing. There was that word again. I struggled to keep my temper in check.
Looks can be deceiving, can't they?
Apooch walked over to me with so much confidence, I thought he should run for king or president or something.
Zane Obispo.
His mouth turned up.
Such a perfect and unexpected surprise.
Yep, that's me. One big surprise. Now, our deal. He loosened his tie and took in the cityscape with a deep breath.
I like this city, he said to Muwan. A very good hiding space. But they can't hide from me for long.
They? Who was he talking about? I wondered if all gods had this hard a time staying focused. Cars zipped below us. Horns honked. Planes flew overhead. The stars were shadowed by the bright lights. I'd never seen anything like it. I hated to interrupt his little moment with Muwan and all, but... So, our deal? I said again.
Apooch's brows came together.
I must say... I am impressed with your bravery, and you did set me free from my dreadful prison. Imagine being imprinted onto the World Tree's paper.
Yeah, imagine, I muttered under my breath. World Tree's paper?
Being that I am in a glorious mood, he said, I'd say one favor deserves another. See how generous I can be?
Okay, so far, so good.
So you'll heal Brooks?
I say we sweeten the deal. Your girlfriend's life for a small pledge.
We're pretty sure that wasn't the deal. What kind of pledge?
To Shibalba.
His black eyes glistened in the city lights.
To me.
It was like a punch in the gut. Yep, I was definitely going to throw up. The pool water began to boil. Black ribbons of steam rose into the smoggy air.
Agree to be one of my soldiers of death, he said, and I will give you back these worthless souls you seek.
Soldier of death? Was he for real? We already made a deal, I argued.
I've changed my mind. And since I'm the one with all the power, I make the rules.
Yeah, well, your rules stink.
Make your decision.
I had a feeling he wasn't going to ask twice. Always the optimist, I asked. So, a soldier of death is what, like a couple-year gig?
Lifetime appointment.
Oh. Well, that officially stank. Gritting my teeth, trying not to think about what being a soldier of death actually meant, I said, if I did it, I mean, become one of your soldiers, it would be like, later. Like when I die as an old man, right? Muwan sauntered to the roof's edge, laughing lightly.
You have until the third moon, Apooch said. When I call, you will answer. I will finish this world and start again. We will have a new order.
The third moon. Did he mean three nights? That might give me enough time to figure things out, rally some help. My insides twisted. I was just some 13-year-old kid with a bum leg, not exactly the world-saving type. As if he could read my mind, Apooch said,
Aren't you tired of being a weakling? A boy who can't run, can't fight, can't do much of anything. You are no warrior, Zane Obispo, but I can make you one.
Shame dug its claws into my gut. I was strong enough to set you free. His eyes glinted with some kind of knowledge I knew he wasn't about to share. Muwan turned and glanced over her tanned shoulder. Whatever Apooch knew, she knew it too.
In Shibalba, he said, eyeing my leg, you'll be whole and strong. You'll be able to do what only gods and kings can do. You'll have power beyond your wildest dreams.
The words raced through me. Strong. Gods. Kings. That all sounded pretty good, and it would save Brooks and Rosie, too. Just as I was about to shake on it, another voice whispered in my ear, but it for sure wasn't Brooks. It belonged to a man.
Don't do it, he said.
I glanced over at another skyscraper. It was even taller than where we stood, and its windows shimmered, reflecting the full moon. In an instant, the building melted to be replaced by a pyramid with steps on the sides leading to a platform on the top. The image was blurry, barely visible. On the platform stood a tall, dark-haired man in a black trench coat, but he was so far away I couldn't see any details on his face. I walked to the edge of the roof to get a better look. Apooch followed, his eyes trailing my gaze. I could tell he couldn't see what I could, because he turned to me, unfazed, and asked,
Do I have your pledge?
The man on the pyramid shook his head, then the image vanished.
Who was that?
I wondered briefly, but I had more pressing things on my mind. I swallowed the lump in my throat and looked Apooch in the eyes. It was local to make a deal with the god of death and darkness. But what choice did I have? You promise you'll save them? Brooks and Rosie? Spears of lightning stabbed the sky. He nodded. Okay. Apooch adjusted his shirt cuffs.
It's not that simple, my friend. You must say the words to bind yourself to me.
A sudden wind raced across the roof, so fast and violent it caused the pool water to splash over the sides.
I, Zain Obispo, Apooch shouted.
I, Zain Obispo. The sky split open and rain poured down on us.
Finish it, Apooch commanded.
Wiping the rain out of my eyes, I hollered over the storm. I pledge myself to Apooch and Shibalba as a soldier of death. Apooch tilted his head back and opened his arms wide.
It is done, old friend, and now he's mine.
Then he smiled, lifted me by my collar, and dangled me over the side of the building.
Hey!
I squirmed and kicked. We had a deal!
Of course,
he said. Then he let go. Chapter 15. I tumbled through the air in slow motion, so slow I could see myself in the skyscraper's glass exterior. Then my reflection vanished, and instead I saw an image of my mom repeated in every window. She was walking on the shore of a forest lake with a tall, dark-haired man. They held hands, laughing like a couple of kids. Then they skipped stones. It was kind of embarrassing to watch. I'd figured it out by now. The guy was my dad. It was the same man who'd been on top of the pyramid, warning me not to give in to Apooch. And he looked normal, not like a demon runner or monster or anyone I wouldn't want to be related to. At least not on the outside. They sat near a fire under the stars. I was so lost in the image, I stopped thinking about the skull-busting cement I was plummeting toward. It was as if this vision of my parents was a net that could save me. The man put his arm around my mom and whispered in her ear, but I couldn't hear what he said. All I know is my mom's face lit up, and in the same instant, he was gone. Vanished like a puff of smoke.
Mom!
I called out. She was there in every window, but she couldn't see me. The world sped up again. It was in free fall.
Apooch's words echoed in my ears. It is done, old friend, and now he's mine!
As the ground rose up to meet me, I felt someone shaking me.
Zain, wake up!
Brooks! I opened my eyes. It was night, and I was back in my room, flat out on my bed. Brooks hovered over me. Did I mention her eyes changed from amber to chocolate brown when she's scared?
It's about time,
Brooks socked me in the arm.
How can you sleep at a time like this?
I couldn't help it. I smiled.
Great to see you, too.
She blew a long piece of hair out of her face, clearly annoyed.
How did we get here? What happened?
I swear I could have barreled into her and hugged her to death. Okay, bad choice of words, but you wouldn't believe how happy I was to see her breathing.
You don't remember?
I sat up, patting my dry chest and legs to make sure nothing was broken.
I remember you pulling me through the water and...
Her mind was turning.
The eclipse!
She turned back to me with terrified eyes and whispered,
"You let him out!"
I couldn't lie.
I didn't have a choice. I had to save you and...
Rosie! I jumped up and rushed out to the living room.
Rosie? Come out, girl!
I frantically checked everywhere, under beds, in cabinets, behind the TV.
Where was she? Apooch had promised! Zain!
Brooks was right behind me.
What's wrong with you? Rosie?
I raced outside, whistling for her, but she was nowhere to be seen.
Rosie!
Nothing but silence answered me. Heat clawed its way through my chest. We had a deal!
I shouted to the moonlit sky, as if Apooch could hear me. Brooks placed her hand on my shoulder.
Zane?
I was borderline hysterical. Maybe it was like post-traumatic stress disorder, that moment when the reality of everything hit me. And I wasn't built for the impact. How could I have been so stupid? But why would Apooch give me back one and not the other?
Because he's a twisted, bitter god who can't be trusted, Brooks whispered.
Her hands flew to her mouth.
Holy Kay, I heard your thoughts.
Whoa, I jumped back. This had happened before, when we were in the pool, but I thought that had been a fluke. I did not want her in my head. It was wrong on so many levels.
Can you hear mine? She asked.
No.
How about now?
She took my hand in hers.
I'm thinking you're the biggest idiot on the planet to make a deal with Apooch.
I jerked my hand free.
How'd you do that?
Brooks blinked fast.
It must happen when we're touching.
She paced nervously. Then she froze and her gaze met mine.
Holy Kay, I know what your dad is.
If it's something bad, don't tell me. I clapped my hands over my ears.
It's not a demon.
I lowered my hands. Yeah, I kind of figured that, I said, thinking of the man in the vision of my mom.
Is it a magician?
No. Okay. I braced myself.
Then what am I?
She stared at me, scanning my face, my neck, my chest.
Tell me! It's not possible. Brooks! You're part god!
I almost laughed.
Me? Part god?
The desert tilted and I felt lightheaded. Maybe her brain had gotten fried when she was knocked out. There was a higher chance of that being true than of me equaling one half god.
No way! Only gods can do telepathy.
My knees buckled and I stumbled. She caught me by the elbow.
Are you sure?
I asked.
1,000%. You, Zane Obispo, are the son of a Maya god.
Holy smokes. That sounded kind of cool.
Which one?
I asked. Please don't say some evil guy like Puke.
I have no idea, but I get it now. No wonder you had the ability to release Apooch. I mean, the prophecy was clear. A powerful innocent with ancient blood.
I wasn't following.
Think about it, she said excitedly.
I could see her mind churning as she paced.
The gods put him away, so maybe that meant only a god could let him out.
Whoa, you never mentioned that before.
I didn't figure it out until just now. I was so focused on the powerful innocent part, I didn't go any further. Plus, a god is never innocent, so it wouldn't have made sense.
She shook her head.
The gods probably thought their plan was foolproof, because they all hate Apooch. None of them would ever set him free.
Okay, so Brooks's logic sort of made sense. It wasn't all that different from middle school, where the cool kids band together against someone they can't stand. She took a deep, shaky breath.
They didn't count on you coming along.
Did you hear that, gods? You got duped.
What's an innocent? I asked. I didn't understand before, but now I get it. It's someone who has no knowledge of his lineage. As in, you're not ruined by your power yet.
Power?
But I didn't have any.
Unless you counted seeing in the dark, and I guess now, telepathy.
So if gods can read minds, I said, then how can you read my thoughts? Are Nawals gods?
No. Brooks dropped her gaze.
It means you trust me. Or else you wouldn't let me in.
It was dangerous to have Brooks in my head, knowing my secrets. Like that I thought she was beautiful and... No offense, but how do I keep you out? Her eyes searched my face, and I could tell I'd hurt her.
Just put up a wall.
Easy as that. She spun on her heels and began walking back to the house. I followed, not knowing what to say. I mean, could she blame me?
It was like reading someone's diary, but way worse. Brooks, hang on! I couldn't keep up. Yeah, some demigod I was. You think I want you in